For 5 years, the local government workforce has been falling. There are thousands of fewer jobs today with cities and counties in South Florida. The state of Florida also has seen its workforce shrink. While the private sector has been adding jobs, state and local government work has been a drag on local job growth. I'm Tom Hudson. Coming up today on the Sunshine Economy, it's public works, government jobs under pressure in South Florida. From school districts to fire stations, the battle between taxes and public sector jobs. The unprecedented drop in property taxes put public budgets under pressure, but as recovery has come, local government jobs have been slow to return. It's government jobs under pressure in South Florida. It's on the Sunshine Economy, and it's next, only on WLRN. Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Today, public works. Government jobs under pressure in South Florida. Now, thousands of government workers are home today, furloughed as the government slowdown enters its second week. Now, they aren't getting paid as the debate over how to pay for government operations continues in Washington for these federal workers. But these government workers will eventually return to their jobs and return to their paychecks. Over the past several years, though, thousands of other government workers have not returned, laid off, jobs eliminated, or positions just left open as state and local governments wrestle with their finances. Even that phrase, right, government jobs, is so politically loaded. With the federal government in this slowdown, some hear that phrase, government jobs, and one may think government dole, or one may be thinking government services. Regardless of where you are politically, public sector work, from school teachers to secretaries to firefighters and county hall clerks, public sector work is a key component of our economy, a source of tens of thousands of jobs and paychecks, and it's one that has been weighing significantly on the South Florida job market. Before we talk about all the statistics and tackle some of the politics, though, let's hear from the people who are actually looking to add public sector jobs.
Our starting pay is $53,000. That's pretty good.
$53,000 for the first year. It's starting pay for what the Lauderhill Police Department is offering for first-year recruits to chase after criminals in its Broward County community. It's among the few local government agencies adding jobs in the coming year. Andrew Smalling is the police chief in Lauderhill.
This year, as the economy got better, the city was able to actually fund those positions, because what happened was they were actually in our budget, but was never funded.
So after a few years of asking for new police officers, the Lauderhill Commission has okayed the jobs to add to the town's payroll. It will boost the police ranks from 113 to 118 sworn officers. The department's budget goes from just below $17 million to over $18 million this fiscal year.
A lot of it has to do with our property tax and also revenue sharing from the state. Probably the biggest factor is the increase in the property taxes. I think for our city, our property rates went up about 4%.
At $53,000 per year starting salary, Lauderhill is making a bigger financial commitment, feeling good about its financial future, to commit the money necessary to outfit 5 new police officers.
It is $500,000, $500,000 for the 5 additional officers. The city was able to do this without raising taxes. It was because of the increased revenues, the increase in property taxes, all the things that are as a result of a better economy, we're able to do this.
And we will hear in today's program from officials running local governments about the improving finances, but that has not necessarily led to new hiring. Some of the reason may be politics, some economic reality.
I have an appointment with the chief. Tom Hudson is my name. Sure.
Inside the Lauderhill Police Station, it's bright and modern. Except for the TV screen flipping through different community messages, it could be a doctor's waiting room, complete with the receptionist behind the glass. This station is where Peterson Hackshaw is busy looking through dozens of applicants to fill the 5 new officer positions approved this month.
So far, from January 1st to now, we have received over 180 applications.
Wow.
Out of the ones that do meet the standards, it's about 50% of the applications do meet the standards. And out of that 50%, then you go down, you look for more qualified, those with the criminal degrees, and the ones who have held certain jobs that you feel would give him a stronger you know, grasp to this type of job. So what are those? And you break it down to another 50% from that 50%. So in totality, you probably end up with, I would say, maybe 40, 50 decent applicants that you can actually look at.
So it's tough competition. But even with a clean driving record, no drug use, a good work history, along with the psychological and physical testing, Chief Smalling echoes what a lot of private industry executives say. It's tough to find qualified applicants in South Florida.
Now we have a lot of applicants, but we may not have the quality applicants that we're looking for. And we haven't reduced our standards. And when I look at a city like Miami that's looking to hire 100 officers, you know, in the next few months, it's difficult. You know, Hollywood is this city of Hollywood is the same way, because they've got to hire something like 30 or 40 officers.
The recruiter in Lauderhill, Peterson Hackshaw, is talking to those recruits, and he finds the decent pay and public service benefits may not be exactly what they are necessarily interested in.
A lot of them are so excited just to be called or to be even in the process. They don't even want to ask questions.
They're not going to ask you necessarily about pay or retirement benefits right from the get-go.
And it's funny because sometimes I ask them, I say, do you even know how much the officers make? And they're going to be like, oh, I'm not sure. You know, like,
Chief told us beginning salary $53,000. Have you told the candidates how much these positions pay?
Yeah, I mean, some of them do know. I mean, they're applying, and that information is posted on the website and everything else. So that most of them do have an understanding of how much it pays and stuff. And they might not know the benefit package and, you know, the step increase that they get every year and the top-out pay for officers. But they have a basic knowledge of how much the job pays and stuff. I think, like I said, some of them is just so excited to get a call that they are going to be processed to become police officers that they don't really care about the benefits, the pay. And then you find out with a lot of younger guys, they don't even know what the benefits are.
Yeah. Well, those benefits can be substantial. Along with that starting pay of $53,000 for the first year, 20 years and out, retirement, according to the chief. Lauderhill Police, one of the public agencies adding to the public payroll in the Sunshine Economy. Join that conversation on the website, a live chat now with Elaine Chen at WLRN.org. On Twitter, at WLRN, use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. What do you think of when you hear the phrase government job? One of the biggest drags on the public sector workers has been public schools. Over the last few years, Florida's public schools have been hit with billions of dollars in spending cuts thanks to less money coming in from state and federal funding, coupled then with the drop in property tax revenue, and this spring, the federal government's spending sequestration. Less money, that means layoffs across the state for public schools. Full-time teaching jobs, though, have been slowly returning to pre-recession levels. But as State Impact Florida's Sammy Mack reports, one group of public school employees has not returned: support staff.
Teachers' aides, secretaries, custodians, all the jobs that aren't instructors or administrators. At the start of last school year, there were 15,000 fewer full-time jobs in Florida public schools than there were 6 years ago. Almost all of those jobs, 99.5%, are support staff positions. And that means the remaining staff is left absorbing their work.
Okay, it's more of a big responsibility.
Barbara Warren is a classroom aide at Coral Reef Elementary School in Miami-Dade County. She used to work with 4 or 5 children with special needs. Now, she's responsible for 8. The county is down a fifth of the support staff it had before the recession. Warren says parents are surprised by her workload.
They don't see how I'm able to do it with the kids, but they see that the kids are being taken care of.
And parents don't just see it in the classroom.
The clerical staff here is so overworked.
That's what Eric Moss saw when he went to visit Lawton Childs Middle School, where his daughter is in 6th grade.
Just to have one question answered, I had to wait until other parents, kids, and so on were also dealt with by this one particular staff member at this school, because there was nobody else to help these kids and nobody else to help these parents.
Moss had been a school volunteer at his daughter's old school, and all he wanted to know was if he needed to go through the vetting process again at this school.
What would have taken me maybe 5 minutes 10 years ago took 20 minutes yesterday.
As a recently retired teacher, he's sympathetic to all of the pressure on that one person at the front desk.
And what I'm saying happened yesterday is something that would have happened at every school.
And this is what's happening all over the place, not just in schools. fewer people to do the same amount of work. Mason Jackson is president and CEO of Workforce One Broward, an employment services center.
All businesses are streamlining and consolidating in an effort to reduce overhead, and that means generally reducing support personnel. Businesses and organizations are concentrating resources on their core mission, in this case, education.
We made several calls and emails to the Miami-Dade School District asking about the cuts, but they did not give us an interview.
We've seen too many of our employees be relieved of duty for budgetary concerns.
Frederick Ingram is president of the Miami-Dade Teachers Union, which also represents support staff.
And that's not fair. It's not fair to our economy. It's not fair to our communities. It's not fair to families.
He hates that any cuts have been made in the schools, but even Ingram says that keeping teachers in the classroom has to come first. For State Impact Florida, I'm Sammy Mack.
Parents, grandparents, caregivers, have you noticed a difference in your child's school with the secretarial staff or the support staff? Maybe you were a former support staffer for a public school district who had their job eliminated. Let us know at WLRN.org. Join that conversation on Twitter at WLRN. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. It is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. Public Works, government jobs under pressure in South Florida. Still to come, the boss in Miami-Dade County bakes up a bitter menu for public sector workers.
So we're trying to stuff more people into a smaller pie, and you can't do that. Either the people get smaller, the wages and the salaries, you know, get smaller, or we just have fewer of them, okay, in order to fit, you know, into this pie.
This is the Sunshine Economy. Public Works, government jobs under pressure in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Not too many years ago, almost 30,000 people had full-time work and paychecks from Miami-Dade County. As recently as 2008, even as the housing collapse had already begun, 29,366 people were full-time employees of the county. Today, just over 25,000 people count on Miami-Dade government directly for their full-time work. That's a 14% drop in 5 years. And even as the housing market has stabilized and tourism continues setting records, the county, under the leadership of Mayor Carlos Jimenez, has continued shrinking the number of full-time employees.
It's a matter of economics. It's simply a matter of the money that we have coming in. During that time, we had a downturn in the property values, and the property values is the largest source of income for the government. And as property values go down, then the income goes down. If we have less income, then we have less money to pay our employees. And so it's one of two things. You either cut salaries and benefits, or you cut employees. You do a combination of the two, and that's what we've done. Between 60 to 70% of the expenses that we have as a government are people.
Yeah.
And so when you have that, some people are going to, you know, lose their jobs. We try to do most of it, though, through attrition. And every year we have about 1,000 vacancies. And so even though you've had about 4,000 less people, by and large, the greatest number of those have been vacant positions.
Down 14% in your headcount from 2008 through 2013. Is that sustainable when you still have to supply the kinds of services that the constituents demand and have come to expect?
Some departments have done a really good job in trimming their workforce, and they really get down to the point where it's getting close to where, hey, services are going to be impacted. Mm.
What kind of agencies are you seeing are at the end of the ability to cut headcount through attrition or otherwise?
I would say the Parks Department. I would say the fire department, simply because they have a staffing level that they have to have, and so you have to have this many people in order to provide the same number of trucks and service. The police department is getting down, although there are in the administrative side of the police department, I think still there's some room for improvement. Mm. So those are the kind of departments that I would say, yeah, it's getting down to the nitty gritty. But that's not to say, all right, that there isn't more that can be had with what we've got, and it's specifically salaries and benefits. This county pays very well. And when I became a firefighter back in 75, you know, I became a firefighter. It was a decent salary. It wasn't a great salary. I wasn't going to get rich on that salary, but I had good benefits. And it was security, and I had a pension system, and I had health care for me and my kids and my wife. But somehow this balance where it wasn't you can make more money in the private sector, but you're not going to be as secure, you're not going to have the same benefits. Somehow that got skewed, where you continue to have the same benefits, these great benefits, but then your salary started to creep up and actually, in some cases, surpass the private sector.
In the service industry like we have here in South Florida, there's a broad skew of salaries because of the service industry, the low-skilled service to high-skilled service, the low-skilled, more kind of clerk-based jobs versus the high-skilled firefighters and EMTs and police officers, highly skilled, which would require fewer supply, higher demand, higher prices.
Yeah, but the thing is, in some of those jobs you're talking about that are high-skilled, there are a lot of people that have trained themselves, et cetera, that have those skills that would like those jobs. And so when we put out the advertisement, say, for firefighter, there's no shortage of people applying to be firefighter. And there's no shortage of people that are applying for firefighter that are already certified firefighters and certified paramedics.
So they're qualified.
They're absolutely qualified. Not so much for the police officers. We have more difficulty with police officers. But if we really did it on a market base in terms of supply and demand, I think our structure would be somewhat different.
Two of the agencies you mentioned that are getting close to proper staffing levels are public safety, firefighting, and law enforcement, police department. What are the agencies that you see still have some trimming to do when it comes to headcount and payroll?
Well, a lot of it would be what I would call the back office kind of agencies. You know, somebody that I used to work for some time ago said that in any public entity, if you put an empty desk in a corner, that within three months a person would grow out of it. Okay, and so that's what we've got to start to look at now: the back office functions and are we as efficient as possible? And they'll all tell you, no, we're super busy. And we got this, but a lot of that super busy stuff is people making work for each other. Even the back office in some of those public safety departments, okay, we may have too many people in that. We may have too many uniformed people running the back office operations. Maybe you can do that more with civilians. Maybe you can do it with fewer civilians. For me, those folks, like those police officers and the firefighters, et cetera, corrections officers need to be doing what they're supposed to be doing, rendering service in the street. Not so much. I'm not going to say you don't need some administrators. Obviously, you do. But what's the percentage of the administration that you have? It'd probably should be around 4%, 5%. When you look at ours, it's probably higher than that.
So is the message to department heads for Miami-Dade County, look at your payroll, and if it's 5% administration, you're good. If it's 5% or more, odds are you may be called into a meeting sometime soon.
Well, we're going to be calling people into meetings regularly now. We're about to start negotiations with all our labor unions, mm-hmm. and we know I am with a high degree of confidence. I know what in terms of revenue it's going to be like for the next 3 years. We have to fit within that revenue, if our labor unions think that somehow. That either the public or the commission is somehow going to raise the rates, et cetera. I think they're living in a dream world.
Is your forecast for revenues increasing due to property value recoveries?
I would say that growth in Miami-Dade County and property values would probably be between 3% and 5%.
With the 3% to 5% averaged aggregate increase over the county in property values, does that mean the headcount numbers will continue to decrease for Miami-Dade County employees?
A lot of it will have to do with our negotiations and what the commission ultimately decides, because I believe we're going to try to negotiate in good faith, but what's coming out of the labor is, they want 5% right now to come back to them in January. We can't afford that 5%.
Is it your sense that your constituents look at public sector employees for Miami-Dade County as overpaid and overcompensated on the benefit side?
I think that if you asked them, you would get a majority would say, yeah, they're in agreement with that statement, that they're overpaid, they're overcompensated, and then they don't do enough. Now, is it right? I would say that in certain instances, yeah, I think that there are instances where some of our employees are making much more than their counterparts in the private sector. Their benefits are much greater than the counterparts in the private sector. The vast majority of our employees are great employees. They come to work every day. They try their hardest, and they're trying to serve. But it all has to be. We have to keep in context of, well, how big is this pie, and so we're trying to stuff more people into a smaller pie, and you can't do that. Either the people get smaller, the wages and the salaries, you know, get smaller, or we just have fewer of them, okay, in order to fit, you know, into this pie.
But the pie is beginning to expand again after many years of contracting 3 to 5%. Not a huge increase, but it is an increase.
Most of that increase is going to be swallowed up by other expenses. The things that concern me, number one, healthcare costs continue to rise and rise way above any increase we have in our property values. And so it's becoming more and more expensive to have employees. And you're seeing that across the nation. A lot of large employers are actually shifting their people to part-time, okay? And I'll tell you one thing. We got to look at that too, okay?
Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, we have to in terms of...
That would mean less health care coverage or perhaps the elimination of health care coverage.
But we have to look at that in terms of okay, how many people we actually need to do the job, you know? So we have to make that determination. Not saying that we will. I'm just saying the same things that the private sector is going through, the same exercises they're going through, as an administrator, I've got to do the same thing in the public sector. Just because of the public sector doesn't mean we're any different.
That's Miami-Dade County Mayor Carlos Jimenez speaking to us here on the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. Join that conversation as well. Some comments there from the mayor. Let's hear from you at WLRN. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy and the live chat at WLRN.org. Still to come, lots more, including we hear from the chief executive in Broward County. Brighter days may be ahead, but don't rush to turn in your job application.
I see very positive signs. I hope that I'm right. You're finally seeing some municipalities beginning to slowly bring back some of the positions that were lost.
Is the help wanted sign out?
Not yet. No.
This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Public Works, government jobs under pressure in South Florida. Thanks for listening. There's no escaping the political nature of government work, but most government workers are not political jobs. They're service jobs, a filing clerk, fix roads, pick up garbage, repair sewer lines, that kind of thing. While Broward County can boast one of the lowest unemployment rates of any Florida county, its public workforce has been hit by the same circumstances as Miami-Dade. Broward County's full-time employment base has dropped by 15% in 5 years. There are 1,700 fewer people on payroll at Broward County today compared to the height of its workforce in 2008. Bertha Henry is the county administrator in Broward County, meaning she's responsible for the day-to-day operations.
There were two main reasons. First, there was Amendment 1, wherein the public made some changes with respect to property taxes and the downturn in the economy.
Which one, in your estimation, was a larger contributor? They're related, but which one really contributed to the pinched revenues to lead to the decision that led to the lower payroll?
By far, the downturn in the economy. Local governments, the only real source of revenue that they have is property taxes. The county can depend on sales taxes, but sales taxes are elastic. So when you have a downturn in the economy, your sales taxes are down as well. So loss of revenue. And the board's desire to make sure that we were very sensitive to that and we didn't try to raise the millage rate to compensate for that. So we made the cuts.
As a county administrator, you have to put into place the policy that the board approves. How did you go about reducing workforce?
So our first strategy was to institute a hiring freeze. And we work with labor so that they understood that with that hiring freeze, we would do everything that we could possibly do to make sure that we didn't contribute to the unemployed in the community. So we would make sure that if there were, as the vacancies occur, and we were having to make layoffs or at least eliminate positions, that we would do it in a responsible way and try to make sure employees were placed where we could reasonably place them in jobs that came open.
Is the worst of it over?
I believe so. I'm an optimist, and I see very positive signs. I hope that I'm right. As you have indicated, you're finally seeing some in municipalities beginning to slowly bring back some of the positions that were lost. We looked at our property taxes. We had about a 4% growth this year, so some positive signs.
Is the help wanted sign out with a 4% bump up in property tax valuations countywide?
Not yet. No. What we what we're doing right now is we're prioritizing frontline. So as we are able to come out of the downturn, we're looking to put more services back on the street for the community. So in doing that, we're very careful in identifying what the highest priority services are.
Yeah. Talk to us about that process, about identifying the priorities of where Broward County and you as the county administrator would like to add jobs first when you're able to add to the payroll and increase employment in the public sector here.
So let me start with, from the county administrator's perspective, we're always looking to make sure that the economics of our community are first taken into consideration. So when people have jobs, people can spend in the community. So we want to see that happen. So this year we were able to institute several improvements to bus routes. So we want to make sure that people can get to jobs that are available. So that was our first priority.
That mean bus drivers?
Bus drivers, yes. In addition to that, the community made itself known. There were lots of animal-related issues this year. So we try to be responsive to the community as well. If we looked at what we proposed in our budget, we looked at public safety, hence we are now providing dispatch services to consolidate what was a very disparate system in our county. So we prioritized that. Animals, again, lots of concerns about that, so we initiated some improvements in that area. And again, from my perspective, we want people to get to work and improve the economics, so transportation also rose to the top.
As you look at the years ahead for Broward County and the finances, are you able to project and forecast hiring trends locally for the county?
We want, as best we can, to help our community advance beyond many others in the state and certainly in the region. We have a really wonderful story to tell here. From a state perspective, we're very low taxed. From a community specific, Fort Lauderdale, Greater Fort Lauderdale, and all of our municipalities, we have what I consider now reasonably affordable housing. So if we can get more of the jobs to our community and continue to incentivize them to come, it's going to be a big help in getting us back to a point where we can start lowering the millage rate again. You know, we did that for many, many years. We want to get back there again.
Speaking with Mayor Jimenez in Miami-Dade, he's gearing up for a new round of negotiations with his labor unions and has told us here on the radio station that the labor unions should not expect to get everything back that they wound up having to give back during the height of the recession. Do you have a similar message as you look forward over the next several years and labor will come back to the negotiating table as time is right and look to replace maybe some of what was taken away?
I don't believe that we're facing that same issue here. Our board was very, throughout the years, their practices were very consistent. What they were able to do for one union, we did for all. So we treated all of our unions the same. So management, union, everybody was treated the same.
And so we took the good with the bad. And so there's no expectation that when things are better, we're just going to open up the floodgates again. No, not here in Broward. That's not been our experience.
Bertha, I'm curious, from the county administrator's point of view, you're able to strip away the politics every day and deal with the operations of the county and treating this as if it were a business. You are the chief executive officer, essentially, of the county administration in Broward County. How did this weigh on you? How did you approach this as a chief administrator?
Well, it weighed heavy on me because unlike many recessions, I've been in this business many, many years, and you see it ebbs and it flows. What was different about this one was it was so dramatic, and you just really didn't see for several years. You didn't see how you would come out of it, and things were pretty scary. And your employees my employees would come to us and really talk about what was going on with their families. So for me, it was important that Broward County didn't add to the ranks of the unemployed.
With 1,700 fewer employees for Broward County today compared to 5 years ago, how has that impacted the level of service of county services?
I think the area that I'm most concerned about, and nature has been kind to us, when a hurricane comes, you really need a lot of people in your local government to help you get through something traumatic or dramatic as a hurricane. And with 1,700 fewer employees, it scares me. I lose sleep about that at times.
Bertha Henry, County Administrator of Broward County, speaking to the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. Speak to us as well at WLRN. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy on Twitter or the live chat online at WLRN.org. Still to come, the drag on the job market can be credited to the drop in public sector work. So get a shovel out, says Nobel Prize winning economist Paul Krugman.
Under these circumstances, even totally wasteful public spending is going to add private jobs, right? Just hire people to dig holes and fill them again, the old cliche.
This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. When Rick Scott ran for governor, among his pledges was to create jobs. Since his election, he has enjoyed a growing job market, but he is careful to point out it's private industry job growth. The size of the state's own payroll has continued to fall under Scott's administration. Here's WLRN Miami Herald's Gina Jordan in Tallahassee.
It's not that Governor Scott doesn't think there's a need for government.
A lean and limited government has a role to play in providing a safety net. But prosperity comes from the private sector, only from the private sector.
During his inauguration, Scott made it clear that private sector jobs would bail the state out of a bad economy.
Faced with a deep recession, some say the answer is to expand the role of government. That's the approach the administration has taken in Washington. That is absolutely the wrong approach.
Scott campaigned on a platform of cutting taxes and red tape so businesses could more easily grow and add workers. He touted his 777 plan, seven steps toward creating 700,000 jobs in 7 years. Scott also promised to cut 5% of government jobs. As of early this year, the state workforce had been reduced by 7.8%. As he said on the campaign trail, he would run the state like a business.
First, we're going to have accountability budgeting in government. Next, we're going to reduce the size of state government. It's crazy the size would, and while all of us are having to worry about making ends meet in our families, they keep growing the size of our state government. They keep raising our taxes.
We tried to get information from the state about how many public sector jobs have gone away in the last few years, either privatized or cut altogether. We also wondered if some public sector jobs are being filled again now that the state is no longer facing a budget shortfall. All we got from Florida's Department of Economic Opportunity is that state government has lost 10,000 jobs since December of 2010, 1 month before Governor Scott took office. The two areas included in the state government category are education and non-education jobs. The numbers show the state has gained jobs in education and lost jobs elsewhere. During Scott's tenure, the unemployment rate has dropped more than 4 percentage points. Economists say part of the reason it's fallen is because people are giving up looking for work. Scott credits his 777 plan, which he says helped add more than 350,000 private sector jobs. And he hasn't wavered on the promise that the jobs created will be by businesses, not by state government.
Floridians shouldn't have to spend more of their money to Tallahassee to pay for non-essential government programs or solely fund the retirement programs of government employees.
The state's annual workforce report shows Florida has 112 government workers for every 10,000 residents. That's the lowest ratio in the country and almost half that of the national average. I'm Gina Jordan in Tallahassee.
In the depths of the Great Recession, remember the phrase shovel-ready jobs? You remember that one. It was one of the goals of the economic stimulus spending enacted by the federal government. It has been controversial ever since, pointed to as a source of exploding federal debt, wasteful and, by some, just not enough spending. One of those is Paul Krugman. He's probably best known for his economically liberal columns in the New York Times. He's also a Nobel Prize-winning economist and professor at Princeton. We caught up with him just as he was about to deliver a lecture to other economic teachers at FAU in Davie.
What if we hadn't had all these cutbacks? What if we hadn't laid off large numbers of government workers? What if public employment had grown normally? What if public spending had grown normally? And the answer is that we would probably have an unemployment rate significantly below 6%. In other words, to the extent that this is a depressed economy now, it's almost entirely the result of these cutbacks, mostly at the state and local government level.
What role does the federal government have, though, in those state cutbacks and the local government cutbacks? We saw the stimulus spending, of course, really come through and now has wound out the system, and the local governments are left with the revenue forecast that they have.
That's right, and that didn't have to happen. The stimulus provided significant aid to state and local governments, which is a very easy and effective and reasonable way to support the economy, because you're not doing some kind of speculative new project. You're just helping to maintain basic government services. That should have continued. We should have had a sustained program of federal revenue sharing with state and local governments until the economy was close to full recovery. That's the great error, because otherwise, in fact, we would be pretty much fully recovered if we had maintained that kind of support.
With the federal government in such disarray and dysfunction, with the government slowdown and, of course, the debt ceiling debate still to come in the days ahead, state governments have to operate with a balanced budget. Many local governments have to operate that same way. So how do they come up with that stimulus spending when they say that the revenues are still under pressure, especially in Florida when it's so much based upon real estate values?
Well, yeah, that is the problem. And if you have a political system that's determined to do the wrong thing, then you're going to do the wrong thing. That's what can you say? There's only so much you can do. And this is an ongoing tragedy, because we do not at this point have a depressed economy because we have a hard problem to solve. We have a depressed economy because we have a political situation that's a mess.
Do you include local and state politics in that?
To a lesser extent.
The local leaders will say, listen, housing property values got crushed, collapsed. The housing market collapsed here in South Florida. Yes, it's come back in some high profile areas, but in the aggregate, it still remains very depressed. And that means that the revenues that these public governments have to spend remains under some significant pressure.
Unlike the federal government, states, local governments can't borrow freely. They don't have the enormous freedom of action that we have at the federal level. But there are some things they can do. Many states have treated any form of tax increase as complete anathema. Some have not. So you look at California, which is having a remarkable comeback, and it's done so partly through spending restraint, but partly also through some tax hikes, which means that they're able to actually start spending some money on much-needed public investment. States aren't as helpless in the face of events as they make themselves out to be. A lot of what they treat as a necessity is actually a choice.
Holding the line on taxes, is that what you're referring to?
Well, just, yeah. So states are saying we cannot spend a dollar more because, look, the revenue isn't coming in. Well, there were choices made. There have been tax cuts when times were good, and then absolute refusal to increase taxes when times are bad. That leaves you without enough revenues. the level of cuts in public employment doesn't have to happen. Obviously, there's going to be austerity. No state is going to be able to spend the way it did during the good years, but they don't have to be cutting back as much as they are.
Supporters of the spending cut model will point to Florida, including Governor Scott here, and will point out, talking about private payroll job growth, stripping out the public payroll job destruction that's happened for the state of Florida, and job growth in the private industry has responded very well to this kind of economic policy.
Actually, no. What's happened in Florida is Florida was hit really hard by the housing slump, and things do tend to come back. So it's actually been quite a lot of studies. It's been, if you look at how badly private payrolls shrank during the slump, that's a pretty good predictor of how rapidly they've grown since recovery began. So a lot of it has just bounced back. And, of course, also Florida is part of that ongoing move to the Sun Belt, which has much more to do with weather than it does with economic policy. I've looked at this a lot, not especially for Florida, but the evidence that low-tax regimes actually promote economic growth at the state level is basically zero. Anyone who tells you otherwise is just cooking the books.
Would your position be, as we sit here in Broward County, Florida, in a state with zero income tax, that the Sunshine State ought to institute an income tax in order to have a stronger government workforce?
I mean, I think that income taxes are a good form of, you know, as a supplement. You don't expect states to rely entirely on the income tax. That even I wouldn't say that. But as a supplement, as a source of additional revenue, yes.
Those that look for low-tax environments and articulate that kind of argument will say, listen, private employment growth today is going to build a stronger economy for tomorrow, not the public sector job growth that we'd seen under previous regimes.
In the economy that we have right now, public and private jobs don't compete with each other. Why aren't companies expanding more? Why aren't they hiring more people? It's because the sales aren't there. The demand isn't there. If we actually had more public spending, more public job growth, that would also mean that there would be more income out there, there would be more consumer demand, there would be more spending, and there would be more private jobs as well. In the current environment, every additional public job created probably adds half, one, maybe more private sector jobs. So it's actually private sector job growth is weak compared to where it should be, largely because we've had these public sector job cuts.
How does a policymaker find that balance trying to grow public sector employment that adds to the private economy?
Actually, again, right now it's still a depressed economy, interest rates near zero. There is no competition at all, and it really, under these circumstances, even totally wasteful public spending is going to add private jobs, right? Just hire people to dig holes and fill them again. The old cliche would in fact add private jobs. Now, of course, it's much better if you do public spending that is aimed at enhancing our future productivity.
Economist Paul Krugman speaking to WLRN from the Davie campus of FAU. The Sunshine Economy continues. Is the worst over for public sector work?
For sure, the number one anchor on employment recovery right now is local government hiring. Jobs just aren't there.
This is the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Public works, government jobs under pressure in South Florida, but there may be a light at the end of the tunnel. Doug Hanks is a business reporter for the Miami Herald.
The economists I talk to say that this should be the year where sort of that bottom is hit and we start to see growth. Right now, the numbers, especially in Miami-Dade, are ugly. The latest job report we saw, they were down 5,000 local government jobs. I mean, for sure, the number one anchor on employment recovery right now is local government hiring. Jobs just aren't there.
The dynamics are property market has improved considerably from those dark days of 2008, 2009. Tourism has continued to improve. Record levels of tourism. That means lots of good sales tax receipts coming in for these local governments. So revenues have been improving, but they haven't necessarily been hanging out the help wanted sign, have they?
Correct. I think what we're seeing, along with the lack of new hiring, is just the lasting impact of the hiring freeze and attrition. and just the unwillingness of managers at all levels to say, I'm going to expand my staff.
It's squeezing more out of what you got. Somebody retires or takes an early buyout, that position does not get filled. So what you have is you don't have those announcements on WLRN or Miami Herald of 100 layoffs or 1,000 layoffs. Instead, it's the drip, drip, drip of attrition, lost jobs.
Absolutely. Other factors are the stimulus money that coursed just millions of dollars through public payrolls at all levels and cutbacks on the federal level. You know, a lot of that is state pass-through. So you're just not seeing the usual rebound in public hiring that we have in past recoveries. One of the reasons it's slower this time around.
And we see this in the language of elected officials talking about private payroll growth, not payroll growth.
Yes, Governor Scott does not recognize public jobs when he makes his monthly jobs announcement. Now, sometimes it's for the best because the public sector will be shrinking while the private sector is expanding. President Obama got a lot of trouble during the campaign when he said the private sector is doing fine. But the private sector is doing so much better than the public sector on these hiring numbers.
Is it a fair comparison, even in good times, to compare public payrolls, public sector employment versus private payroll growth?
Well, I think they both depend one way or the other on consumer spending. Local government depends on real estate values, which really ebb and flow with how much you're willing to pay for your property. So I think it's a relatively good measure. But the difference is in past downturns, the public sector has been able to increase spending to try and either meet the need caused by the economic downturn. You know, as people are making less money in their jobs, they need more help from the government. And so the government expands on the federal level and the state level. You'll see more injection of dollars just to sort of pump things up. We certainly saw that during the stimulus era, but it was very short-lived.
Yeah.
And the drop in property taxes that these local governments were dealing with was just unbelievably challenging.
Unprecedented.
Yeah. And obviously, you look at what's happening with Miami-Dade County, still feeling that. Now, there's a political debate there, whereas should we just do a very modest increase in property taxes? But it wasn't politically viable.
So when you do see that light at the end of the tunnel, possibly this year, when we look back on the year that was, government to public sector employment perhaps bottoming out here in South Florida, the jobs that are likely to come back in the public sector, will they come with the kinds of benefits and the kinds of types of pension and health care benefits that have been so in focus, but also had been so treasured on the part of public sector employment?
Well, that's the big debate, of course. And there's when it comes to the benefits, the employee benefits of government, that's probably the number one issue facing when it comes to long-term budget problems. But then again, union representation is so much stronger in the public sector than it is in the private sector. Generally, public employees do have better benefits. So, you know, government jobs are pretty good jobs to have.
Mm-hmm.
And this has just been a really rough stretch for them.
How much are we willing as a community to have that debate, to choose between the service that we expect from our public agencies and public entities and the taxes that we pay? In other words, I guess, is that economic calculation being made on the part of the South Florida community, the taxes that we paid and what we get in return for those taxes?
Well, I feel like we know which side of the debate is winning, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the fall with the Jackson bond issue.
This is Jackson Health Systems, a new bond issue, right?
Correct. And asking to borrow a bunch of money and pay it back using property tax revenue. And will the voters endorse that? Or will the voters say, absolutely not my dollars?
Yeah, and the money raised in the bond effort, some of those going to create new jobs, which then become, of course, taxpayers and are in the pool with all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that would be an economic boost for when you're creating all that construction.
Doug Hanks, business reporter for the Miami Herald, and we will tackle public debt in South Florida next week on the Sunshine Economy. Regardless of your politics and your feelings about public sector work, it is necessary. The issue is, what do you get in return for the taxes? What's the return in services and the economic impact from the dimes and dollars sent to local and state governments? It is the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.
And every time it rains, and it's from heaven.
Shoo-be-doo-be.
Don't you know each cloud contains banners from heaven?
Shoo-be-doo-be.
You'll find your fortune falling all over town. Be sure that your umbrella
is up, upside down. And every time it rains, it rains. And don't you know it's Crocodile? Every time it rains, it rains. And don't you know it's Crocodile? You find your fortune falling. All over town, all over town, all over town. Be sure that your umbrella is upside down, we live up.